exactly, you see this function here, this set of t, and I take that are all equal. So this coupling constant g1 is equal g2 equal g3 and so on, just for simplicity. And in the first case, I even take a single environment. I take just one electron in the environment. Then this function set of t, which I recall is what we have here, so the off-diagonal element, it is a kind of oscillatory function, which starts from 1, it goes to 0, and then the Poincaré time in this particular case is actually, it should be something like pi half, it should be, because 2j1t, so you go back very fast. And then, I mean, in this case, of course, you decohere and cohere very fast, because you just have one electron in the environment, so it is pretty easy. But if you, so to say, then I put 20 electrons in the environment, then I have this still the same function at the power of 20. The Poincaré time doesn't change. It is still pi divided 2, but you still start from 1. You go very fast to 0. Then it basically stays 0. And before the Poincaré time, then it goes up again. So this is, not 10. This is the number of environments, so 10 electrons. The environment has 10 electrons, all of them couples with the same intensity, and it is such a way that alpha squared minus beta squared is 1/3. I mean, this set of t, where is it written? Here, alpha squared minus beta squared for all electron is taken as 1/3, just for simplicity. It is just an example, but putting some numbers in. And then you see that when you increase the number, you decohere much faster. Then I have 100. So 100 particles in the environment and the same setup. Again, in this case, if you don't change the setup, it goes down very, very fast, and then it goes up very, very fast. So you decohere very fast, but still the in that case, the Poincaré time would be the same. So you go back. Then I just changed here. So I just say that alpha squared minus beta squared is 0. So the environment electron are a superposition of plus and minus. So this is the only change. And the coupling constant are all the same. So then, you know, we have again, when you have one electron, it always goes like that. It is always a kind of a sinus. A cosinus function. And this is very similar, so it doesn't matter which is the original state of the electrons of the environment. When you increase the number of particles, you immediately goes down very fast, and then at this Poincaré time, you go up again. So it doesn't really depend on how the environment starts with, which is intuitive. It shouldn't really depend much on that. But what it is more interesting, is the following, is that why should all the electrons of the environment, so to say, have the same spin configuration? This is, of course, not the case. Some will be up, some will be down, some will be some configuration, and so on. And this is done here by taking that actually each electron has a different superposition. So it is put in such a way that each electron comes with a different superposition of up and down. Of course, when you have still one electron, everything is, in the environment, everything is simple. But when you have more than, you start to have 10 or 100, it's again something very similar. So also in that case, it doesn't really matter if the electron is in us. They are all of the electrons of the environment point in the same direction, or they are completely different one from each other. Basically, you get some similar situation is that when you increase the number of particles, you go very fast to 0, and then you go up again. But still, if the coupling constants are all the same, and in this kind of setup, you always have the same Poincaré time. So it always goes back. So the question is, how not to get that? And this is in order to increase the Poincaré time, so in order to avoid what we would expect, that we don't have a coherence coming back after a short time. Actually, when you decohere, you will decohere basically forever. We have to take into account a different coupling constant also. So here the coupling constant, you see, decrease with the number of electrons. The first electron interacts strongly, the second a bit less, the third even less. I mean, it's just a G1, G1 over kappa. So for the second electron, the interaction is the half for the first. The interaction of the third electron is 1/3 of the first, and so on. And also some random direction of the electron spin, some point up, some point down, some point whatever. Then you do the same. Of course, for one electron, you always have some, because of course you have something like that. But then you see, when you already have 10 electrons, and this different coupling constant, which is realistic, different spin, which is also realistic, you have something like this. So it goes to zero and it doesn't go back. So the Poincaré time is much larger. There is always a kind of Poincaré time, but you have to wait very long now. And here I also had, this is, you know, the same if you just increase the time. You see that at a certain point, this function set, which starts here, it has some peaks. So that would be some phase where actually thermodynamics is broken, so to say, where you go back to, in some cases, you almost go back to one. So the system coheres automatically itself. Of course, for a realistic system, these peaks would go down to billions and billions and billions of years to get them. But in principle, they're always there. So this is, of course, you see, the number of the environment is 10. You can imagine when you put some Avogadro number, which is much larger, then you will never see these peaks. I mean, you will see them if you just wait long enough, but this long enough is very, very long. So this is the very same thing, just for a longer time, 3,000 times unit in this. And then you see always that it has some peaks, some recurring. Some very complicated but periodic function whose Poincaré time is simply very large. So I think it's enough. But that shows how such a simple model actually already embodies some non-trivial features of the interaction of an electron with many electrons of the environment. Okay. This I can close. I don't need it now. Now, what I would like to do, before going, since I already had a difficult model, and it was, I mean, this decoherence model is not trivial, it's some harder mathematics. I would like to, instead of doing Bell, and Bell is not easy as well, so I think I will postpone the Bell inequalities to tomorrow. And today I will do something which is a bit easier, but also related to this, to the entanglement of, of photons I will use, but something similar to what we already had. And actually we'll use such a similar setup for Bell tomorrow. And I will just say this is called quantum cryptography. So this is something which is very on vogue, actually. It is basically also used. It can be already realized experimentally, and it works pretty well. Okay. Okay, so this is the topic. So quantum cryptography. So of course it goes to a very long history to which I'm even not an expert, which is how to code a message and then to decode it. This is there's an importance also of military history and whatever. Already Julius Caesar used a simple way to crypt his message, was just to use three letters ahead in the alphabet. So if we have A, B, C, D, E, F, it was just instead of the A, put the D, E, F, and so on. So this is what he already used. You could also use a random, a bit more advanced would be to use a random correspondence in which you start from this, a permutation, a random permutation, and you assign A to whatever other letter, N, and so on. And then you have some weird looking stuff. But actually, these kind of cryptographies are very easy to crack. That's very easy to crack because each language is come with a certain number of A, of E, or U, and then you can very easily get it. So this is not really something that you would use for a serious cryptography. Of course, in general, you should then use something more complicated. And there is, and I will say in a moment, a way to, which is not quantum, which is classical, to be absolutely sure that your message will not be cracked. Absolutely sure. I will tell it now. It is very easy, actually. It's very easy. But there are problems connected to that, of course. Problem that I will discuss in a moment. So, but in general, we have the following setup. We have Alice, A. Alice, and Bob agree on a key, on some, and exchange it in a safe way. So there should be a key, how to go, I mean, in that particular case, that would be the key, take the third letter, of course, very trivial. And they should agree on that. And then, of course, Alice go home, Bob goes where else, and then they, when Alice want to send a message to Bob, so does something like that. You have a message. You apply a function, kappa, the key, so you code it, and you get a crypted message, which is mbar. Mbar is sent openly, so everyone can read mbar. But the idea is that if you don't have kappa, you cannot reconstruct it. But if you have kappa, then you apply the inverse kappa, and you get the message. This is what Alice does, and this is what Bob does.
Can we turn on the lights? Maybe.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Okay. So this is again, I repeat, Alice has a message M. It has a function kappa and transform M in mbar. Mbar is sent openly, and then Bob, who knows kappa and then knows also kappa minus one, transform back mbar into M, and he has the message. And here in the middle we have Eve, which tries to catch the message, Eve from eavesdropper, from English, so trying to. And of course the point is that each kind of system you can imagine there, if Eve has enough time and competence, will most probably crack that. Unless there are three possibilities to make it safe. One is to use what I will say in a moment, so absolutely uncrackable classical key. The second is to use an NP problem of mathematics, so kind of problems like the factorization of prime numbers. And this is what we use, by the way, this is also classical, but this is what we use in every transaction. Or the third is to use quantum mechanics. These are the way to be sure. But otherwise, each kind of, no matter how complicated the reassessment of letters and so on, would most probably lead to a possibility for Eve to get that message. Okay, so this is the this is basically the setup. And now comes to the purely classical and perfect method. And it is the following. There are some rumors that it was really used during the Cold War by Russian and Americans. And this is the following. So we can, so the Alice and Bob, or the Russian and American, can meet at a certain place to spy, most probably. And then they should just throw the coins many, many times. Just throw the coins many, many times. Actually, the question is that coins is really random. This is another issue that could be a problem. But let's assume this is the case. They throw the coin and they assign 0 or 1 to the two possible outcomes of the coin. So, so basically what they do, is the following. They get a kind of very long chain of 0 and 1 out of throwing the coin. I have 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, whatever. OK? Ja, weil, weil ich das benutze später. In dem, dann, wenn ich das nicht mache, dann deswegen benutze ich das. By the way, human people are not that good random generators, for the reason that we tend to jump from 0 to 1 pretty fast, but sometimes in reality you can have a pretty long chain of 0, long chain of 0 in between. It is rare but possible, but our brain associates to something like that as basically impossible. So this is also a typical trick when one believes in supernatural stuff and so on. Even, I mean, something whose probability is small but non-zero at a certain point can happen. So you don't need to use anything.
This is why you lose at the casino.
Also, yeah. Well, also the roulette with the zero. Yeah, it's only 1 out of 37, but in the end it makes the difference on the long term. Okay. Of course, now Alice and Bob should better have this chain very long. Very long, so they should spend maybe eventually all the day with this coin. And that's it, and then they go apart. Of course, the usual thing that they say is, but if you have a safe way to communicate, why don't you use that? But sometimes you cannot. Sometimes the safe channel is open for a very short time, when the two spies meet. Then it's gone. So this safe channel cannot be used to send a regular message. Can be open for a very short time in a certain particular situation, and then it's gone. So this is why you cannot use that safe channel. But still, you can use it for a short time to exchange this string. Then let's assume that the message is the following. Then, okay, they agree on this list. And then Alice and Bob goes apart. And then Alice want to send to Bob the message M, which is the number 5, if I'm right, in the ASCII code. 00110101. So this is our message. Okay, and this is what Alice wants to send. But first he has to, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, it looks like. Every 1, 2, 3, 4. It takes the first 8 number of this list, one more, up to here. And then it does this construction. So this is actually the operation kappa that we said before, 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1. It does the following kind of operation, where 1, so 0 plus 0 equal 1, 1 plus 0 equal 1, sorry, 0 plus 0 equals 0, 1 plus 0 equal 1, 0 plus 1 equals 1, and 1 plus 1 equal 0. So this is not the Riemann sum, this is the sum. I mean, actually, in the binary system, 1 plus 1, one, plus one would be 10. You take just the...
Yeah, 1 plus 1 is 1, 0.
Yeah, 10, not 10. I mean, in the binary system, this would be 1, 1, 0.
10 is a decimal.
Yeah, 10 is not really a 10.
Yeah, okay, but
we can call it
we want. We call 10 the switch of our when we go to the next level. So
okay.
Each base is base 10.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
No, you should be careful. Yeah. Each base is base 10 because it doesn't matter where you start. Even if you start at 8, then the 9 would be a 10. So each base is a base 10. So, but then, so this is the message. This is, so to say, we do plus. We do this operation. And this is the chain. And then we get the message of this type 1, 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0. And this is the message that I sent on the open channel. And since I used a random string here, this is also completely, there is no way from this to get to that unless you know the chain, the random chain. So this I can send openly. So Alice can send it to Bob. And then Bob does the operation, inverse operation, which in this case is the sum, because the sum is equal to inverse in this case. So it takes the very first 0, the very first list of this, so he should rather mess up and keep track of what he used before and later. He does that, and then you get this is the message, which is the number 5 back. Perfect, done. So this is a very good trick, so to say, but there are some problems. First, you can use it as long, I mean, once you've used these 8 numbers of the list, you have to erase them. You shouldn't reuse them, because if you use them again and again, at a certain point, Eve would get it. So actually, after you use them once, you have to throw them away. But then you can, I mean, this chain that you did is definitely limited in length. I mean, even they stayed all day by throwing the coin at a certain point. That's it. So there is a problem that you can send a limited amount of messages because of the limited C that you had at the beginning. And of course, the other problem that you already mentioned is if the way to generate this chain was really random. And well, maybe a coin would do the job. So this is the first way to send with being absolutely sure coded messages and no one can crack them. So this is a good method, but it has these drawbacks due to the fact that this chain has to be as long as the message and so on. So the chain has to be as long as the message. So it must be longer than the message in order to send all the message. So it has some practical problems then. You would like to have a small key and longer message. This is the best, right? Then you can send whatever you want without problem. Okay, what we use today is something completely different, where people know everything, actually. So what we use is RSA, oh, I have to check who. So this is using a difficult problems to solve. It's the one that we use now for transactions in internet. They use prime numbers. Which I try just to sketch because it fits into. This has nothing to do with quantum mechanics, this one. It is a problem which is just difficult to solve. By the way, it is interesting that there were these mathematicians in England at the beginning of the last century, the 900, that they were very proud that what they were doing was completely useless. So they said, we work on prime numbers, no one will ever need that. And they were proud of that. It was not true. We need it all the time. So it was, sometimes you do not know for what things will be useful. So the idea is the following. First, one should remember what is a kind of sum with modulus. So if I write something like this, it looks bad. right? And actually, I tried with my daughter, who is eight. After a while, she understood. He says, yeah, this is the clock. This is 6 plus 7, 13. If you move around the clock, you go back to 1. So that, so actually, we should say 6 plus 7 equal 1 modulus 12. Right? So this is, so in other words, you have something like 6 plus 7 equal 12 times 1 plus 1. This is the rest is what we have this. I mean, of course, if you have something like 18 plus 7 is also 1 modulus 12 and so on. Modulus 12, sorry. Because this would be 25, and 25 is 12 times 2. You go 2 times around plus 1. So then the 1 is what it stays. OK, and this is what this has to do now with usual cryptography. It's something that basically everything is known by all parts, even by Eve. It's simply that Eve doesn't know how to calculate it. So this is actually cryptography, classical. Okay, so that comes to the idea with the prime numbers. Suppose that I start with a number n, which is the product of two prime numbers, p and q. And we know that it is a very difficult problem when you know the product to go back to p and q, even if p and q are uniquely determined. This is a kind of exactly NP problem. So it's a problem which requires a lot of time to be solved on a computer. The larger is n, so the larger are the two prime numbers, p and q. When you know n, it is extremely tough. It is extremely tough to go back. And this is something, so to say, useful for us, as I will say in a moment. Okay, and this is the trick that they use. Actually, it's a bit more complicated what it is used in practice. But it is really related to the fact that when you know, if you know n, you do not know p and q. What one does is then to build phi of n, which is just the product p minus 1, q minus 1. Then just choose some e, some number e, which is coprime, so tile-framed. Coprime of phi of n. Then determine the number d such that e plus d, say e you have chosen, and e plus d should be 1 modulus this phi of n that we just calculated. I will do an example in a second.
Yeah, what's the coprime again?
Tile framed. So if you have, let's say you cannot divide it. So let me make an example. If you take, for instance, 120, you shouldn't choose 10. If phi is 120, then you should choose, for instance, you can choose 23, because 120 divided 23 is not a natural number. So this is exactly the example that we'll do in a second. So you can choose whatever you want. But once you have chosen e, you can determine d in such a way that e plus d is one modulus this number phi of n, which will be most probably very large when p and q are very large. Now, the number n and the number e are open. So everyone knows them. Alice knows, wants to send the message, knows them. Bob, who gets the message, knows them. And also Eve knows it. Also Eve, who would like to crack the message, also knows it. But what Bob has, and the others don't have, Bob knows D. And actually, in order to know D, you need to have P and Q, not only N, but to have the knowledge of both prime numbers in that sum. And so E is now, so now the point is that, so how does it work? You have the message M. Then what Alice does is to build the encrypted, so decrypted the M, which is M at the power of E modulus N, where N is this big number there. Now, the interesting thing is what then, this is what Alice does. Then Alice sends M to Bob. And then Bob does the opposite operation. That is the problem, that M is equal M at the power of D. So basically, still modulus N. So in other words, if you take the message M and you multiply at the power E D, E plus D, this is actually equal, E times D. This is actually 1 modulus N. This is the properties. So if you know D, you can go back to M. And that's it. So if you know D, which means knowing P and Q, you can go back. So this is the trick that they use in normal cryptography, RSA cryptography. Let me do an example so it will be a bit easier to understand. Let's suppose you start with, we take for the example small prime numbers just to understand. You start with 11 and 13. By the way, we still do not know if it is true that there is an infinity of such a prime numbers which are only distant of 2 units among each other. Vermutung. This is a conjecture, right? But we still, it seems true, but we have no idea if this is the case. But 11 and 13 are such twins prime numbers, by the way.
I think they prove that there are infinitely many either twins plus that some that are 4 apart and those are 6 apart. So one of these groups must be infinite, but they don't know which one. Or
uh-huh.
3. But one of these is infinite because the sum of all 3 is infinite.
I didn't know that.
But
not that there are infinite twin prime numbers?
No,
they
don't
know that.
Either twins, then with 4 apart or with 6 apart.
Ah,
those
is infinite.
Yeah, because the sum of all 3 is infinite.
But you don't know which one of those 3.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It might also be all 3, but one of them must be.
Okay, oh, cool. But this is a new result, or no?
Maybe, I don't know. No.
There is a nice book on prime numbers. Something like Mystery of Prime Numbers. I have to check, written by a mathematician who goes over all these theorems. Maybe I forgot. I don't remember that one. Okay. So then we have the number n in this case is 143. It is just the product. Then we can choose E equal, for instance, 23 in this example. Then one has to determine D in such a way that E times D is equal 1 modulus 120. And actually, in this case, one finds that D is 47. Actually, the reason is that 23 times 47, if you do the stuff, is 9 times 120 plus 1. So the result is the 1, because it's modulus 120. Now, suppose that you want to, for instance, you start with the message, and the message is the number 7. Then you build the message M bar, which is 7 at the power of E, which is 23, modulus, and this is equal to, of course, modulus N, and then it is 143. And this is then what actually Alice sends to Bob is 2. Bob takes the 2 and does 2 at the power of 47, which is this D that E alone knows. And this is equal to 7 modulus 143. So he gets the 7 back. So this is when we do actually transaction with credit cards. This is the trick. Of course, so there are two comments. If one would come with some method to calculate, to be able to get P and Q out of N, all our safety in internet is gone. And there was a famous email of a mathematician called Bombieri, who, for the 1st of April, sent, I have a way to calculate the prime numbers, P and Q, out of the product. It was, actually, the email started to go around, and it, when it went out, it was already the 5th or 6th of April, and people forgot that, actually, it was sent, the original email was the first. The CIA got extremely, reacted very, I mean, promptly after that. It was a, there was then a conference with the mathematicians because they said that we presented that, and it was, I mean, full of people there, and then they realized it was the 1st of April. But of course, if you have something like that, it is a threat also for our safety. On the other hand, one has to say that if quantum computers can do something, one of the things will be exactly that, to get out of N, to get P and Q. So they can, this problem, which seems to be a exponentially growing, a problem which is extremely complicated to solve, so non-polynomial problem, so NP problem, like the one, it is similar to the one of the Mercant, which goes, has to go through N towns. This is also a problem that you cannot easily solve, that it becomes extremely complicated when you increase the number of towns. So this is the, we have the trademan who has to go through N towns, and which is the shortest way between all of them. Of course, if you have 3 or 4, this is easy to calculate, but if you start to have 20, it becomes very complicated. And these are this kind of problems that are very difficult to solve. We do not know if quantum computing will be able to solve all NP problems, no idea, but some of them, yes. Like, for instance, the factorization of prime numbers, this is something that they can do. It was already shown that they, how they can do. The problem is that we don't have quantum computers with enough qubits in order to do it. You need many of them. And it is debated if there will be anything like that. By the way, there is nowadays a kind of D-Wave system, but it is a private company, and we do not know if they really do, if they really have some kind of quantum computation inside that stuff. So we do not know if they, because it is it's not research, but they say they have that. Yes? But it's not this D-Wave.
It's from IBM. They have 5 qubits.
Yeah, 5 qubits. Yeah. Okay, 5 with small number of qubits. There are many examples, and actually they could even calculate. They could even factorize some 12 in 3 part times. But no.
They have not only computed the energy levels of Shenzhen. That was one of the first papers published using quantum computing.
Okay. No, there are some things, small things that you can do, but not. I mean, of course, it is not comparable up to the present time with a normal big computer, a normal computer. So, but in principle, they can, they could do.
Are you talking about the private encryption software, hardware?
No, in general.
No,
this is the way. This is, I do not know. No one knows what is inside. I've read some news recently that they claim again that it is definitely quantum and they have everything under control. But this is what they claim. But we do not really have.
I was saying that in a physics conference, a huge one, told from one of the engineers that developed this.
Yes, and. But how many qubits do they have?
No, that's not released.
Ah.
They just show the picture of the very first prototype that was practically, you know, it was a closet. Then they say after 5 years we were able to have this one.
Okay. Okay, but about quantum computing, maybe we'll come back later. So let me go back to now to cryptography. So this is the standard one that we use. And it's still not quantum. So we had these two examples which are not quantum. But the link to quantum world is the fact that quantum computer could crack that. But now let's go to real quantum cryptography, which is a way to exchange messages, being sure that you are not actually, that there is no Eve around. And once you know that there is no Eve around, then you can, without any risk, send the message M, and of course, change into M bar, and you're sure that no one will ever get it. And you don't have before to sit for a very long time throwing the coin. So you can do actually, starting already, Alice and Bob being far apart. They don't need, the classical channel to start with. They don't need that. And this is how it works. So basically, we have again Alice and Bob, which exchange photons. And let's suppose that we have a source in the middle. Actually, it doesn't need to be in the middle. It can be also by Alice or at Bob. But let's put it here. And we have a quantum state of the following type. Where H is horizontal, V is vertical. So we have one photon which goes to the left, one photon which goes to the right, and the polarization of this photon is either horizontal or vertical, but it is entangled. This is like kind of the Einstein-Podolsky-Rosen experiment. Either is HH or VV, but not mixed. And this is the state S of the two photons. So this is again quantum mechanics. And as I already did today, when I did the double slit experiment, I start from dd prime, which is just a rotation of that, 1 over square root of 2, 1 over square root of 2, minus 1 over square root of 2, 1 over square root of 2. HV, and the inverse of that, it is rather easy to do. Then you can actually rewrite your state S also in the basis d prime, which is just rotate it to 45 degrees. It is a simple calculation that you get. D plus d prime. That is, again, if Alice choose the basis, Alice can basically choose to measure either horizontal, vertical, or can measure dd prime in that basis. On the one, we have two bases, basis one, basis two. And Alice can choose to use one or the other, and also Bob can choose to one of the other. And the idea is that when both of them choose to use the same basis, they get the same outcome. We can, for instance, say that they use a kind of polarizer. Either the photon goes through or is absorbed. So either you get, a one or a zero. You can have something like that. But the important point is that when they choose the same basis, doesn't matter if they choose the basis, so we have the HV basis, or we have the dd prime basis. In both cases, they get the same outcome when they choose the same basis. So either the photon goes through both at Bob and Alice, or it is blocked both at Bob and Alice. Of course, the situation is, since we can imagine that Alice, we don't send only one photon. We repeat the experiment many, many times. We can send hundreds and hundreds of photons. Each time, Alice can decide to measure in this basis that we can also, this basis can be like this. So we measure H or V, and dd prime is this. We measure d and d prime. Alice can decide whatever she wants to do, and also Bob can decide whatever he wants to do. And When they chose the same, of course they still do not know when they chose, but when they chose the same basis, they need to get the same outcome. Either one or zero, but one went through, zero was blocked, but they will get the same outcome. And when they chose the different basis, the situation is different. So I can write my state, quantum state, when, for instance, let's say Alice measure in the basis DD prime and Bob measure in the base HV, the quantum state would be square root of 1/2. One over square root of 2 d minus d prime h plus 1 over square root of 2 d plus d prime d. In this case, so if Alice chooses this basis and Bob this basis, the outcomes are completely uncorrelated. So 50% of cases they will get the same results and 50% different results. You see, because you can have dh or d prime h or dv or d prime v all with the same probability. So they will get simply uncorrelated result in that case. And then what Alice and Bob do is this. Alice, Bob, they do this list, measurement in the HV basis, measurement in the DD prime basis, and the same here. And then, let's say we have all our measurement. Let's say, let's do the following one. Mm-hmm. Let's say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and so on. For instance, we can say that the first two times Alice measure in this direction, HV, and gets 2 times 1, then measure in the other direction also get 1, then get here to 0, then get here 1, then here 0, and so on. So this would be a typical outcome of Alice. Experimental results on the photon. One, the photon went through, zero was absorbed. And sometimes she measured in this direction, sometimes in that direction. Better that she chose some random way to decide which one she used. And Bob did the same, completely uncorrelated to Alice, but we could have something like this. Etc., etc. Of course, when they chose the same, they have the same result, 1, 1, 1, 1. When they chose a different measurement, that can be different, or it can be equal, this is 50-50. Yeah, so in this particular case, they get 1, 0, of course it's not the same. And in this particular case, they get the same, but this is just by chance. Good, what is the next step? So how can I use this to send a message? This is still not clear at this point. First, what Bob and Alice can do through a classical channel, radio, they can speak to each other and tell, look, I did the following sequence of measurements. So for instance, the first time I measured HV, the second time also, the third time I measure this, and so on. And also Bob tells. So Alice and Bob knows when they measured along the same direction. So that would be, in this case, in the second though, in the third case, yes. In the fourth, no. In the fifth, yes, and so on and so forth. They erase all these things where they measure in different directions. They just throw away from their list. They don't care. These are lost bits. And where they are in the same direction, or the last one as well, when they when they are in the same, now this one also, yeah, because it's here and this one as well.
Not the last one.
The last one, that's a bit odd.
Yeah.
They measure the same direction but get a different result.
Oh, this is wrong then. This would be when the detector didn't work.
Well,
oh, no, there is no EVE. Well, not yet, there is no EVE yet. So in that case, so they now, they in principle now, they have a list of 0 and 1, and they know the results. And they could use this 1 1 0 1 1 as their key, as the key, the chained C that we saw before for the throwing the coin. And then they could then use a message M, use this sum, this particular sum, by using this chain C, and they could then send a message. Almost true, but there is still a problem. What if EVE is around, right? Before sending the message, it is better that Alice and Bob are a bit more careful. They should sacrifice still the half of the photons. For instance, let's say the each second one that they measured, so they could say the second one in which it was in the same direction, and check if they get the same outcome, and they will make it open. So they say, the first time, that stays secret. The second time, different measurement, forget. The third time, again, we measure in the same direction, and I get a one. Did you get a one? Of course, it should be say yes. Why did they do this? They do it in order to check if it is correct that this coincidence is true. Why they do that? Because they want to be sure that there is not EVE trying to catch up the photons in the middle. And the point is that if there is no EVE around, then they would always, when they say openly what they got, in the half of the cases where they measure in the same direction, they will see that they have perfect coincidence. And they say, oh, very good. So everything is working. OK, our detectors are working. And we can then use the other half that we didn't make public for sending the message. So actually, they don't use all of them. They sacrifice the half still in order to be sure that no one is around. So why they do that? The point is that if EVE is really trying to catch the message, so she has to measure the photons at some point with some detector, she would inevitably spoil the coincidence between Alice and Bob. So we have Alice, Bob, here is the photon sent, and here is sent, and here we have EVE. Try to catch this photon. Now, which basis has EVE used? Well, also EVE, she has there also her device. She can choose the both bases. So HV or DD prime. She can do exactly the same what Alice and Bob. She also then knows, because they will make it public, the list of measurements, and she knows also what she has measured. At least in those cases, that it will be 50%, when she has done the same measurement of Alice and Bob, then she would know exactly the outcome, right? So if, for instance, in this particular case, one and one, and EVE was so lucky to choose also that basis, then she would also measured one, and then the photon would have gone to Bob, who would have also measured one. But then in that case, Alice would have the one, but EVE would know that one. But there is something that that EVE cannot know. She doesn't know, because this is completely random what Alice and Bob have used. In some cases, she would choose a different basis than the one of Alice and Bob. So when Alice and Bob choose, for instance, let's go back, for instance, in this case, they choose the same basis HV, but EVE choose the other one, she could actually change the outcome on Bob then. She would then spoil the coincidence for that particular case on Bob. So then Alice and Bob would be in that particular case if Eve measured in the other direction, would not measure 1 and 1, could measure 1, 0. And this is the key. This is the point. So if they sacrifice, or if Alice and Bob sacrifice the half of their would-be message, and they check that they always get the same, they are sure that there is no Eve trying to get the message. Then they can sacrifice this half, and with the half of the messages still remaining, of the one when they measure in the same direction, they can finally send them. And this is how, so in the end, so they can send in this message exactly as the ways we say before with this chain C and so on. So this is how actually quantum cryptography works. So actually it is, you cannot avoid that Eve is around, but you can make sure that no Eve was there. And once you have that, you can then send the message. So actually the exact number, if Eve had intervened, she would inevitably spoil at least 25% of the agreement between Alice and Bob. So Alice and Bob can go over the list, what they make public, of the outcomes in which they had the same, they made the same measurement in along the same direction. And if 25% is off, they know that there is some Eve around. And then they what they can do, they cannot send a message, they stop. Of course, with this system, you cannot prevent that some Eve will around and just avoid you to send the message, because it could also always hear around, and then you still, but at least you know that the message will not be catched, but you cannot send it also. So it's not perfect in the sense that, I mean, Eve could block the communication, but could not avoid, could not get the message. And this is, it's already doable, because now the coincidence and the photon detectors are, of course, I mean, in a reality, the details are important. When you use real detectors, it can be that you get a wrong direction because your detector don't work properly, or your source was not exact. So when you do things in real life, you should take into account that your detectors are not perfect. So you have to take into account all the caveats of such a real setup. But still, this is something that is doable, and actually there were already experiments in which basically this was already done. So this is already at the level of applicability. And the last thing, as I said, the choice of which detectors to use is better also to use another quantum process. And this exactly is the point. How do we generate quantum, real, casual, I mean, random numbers? Actually, the only way that we know how to use random numbers, which is not pseudo-random, but random, is to use quantum mechanics. So even Casino Online actually use quantum mechanical systems to get random numbers. Because if it is pseudo-random and someone gets out of it, then you can catch it. Yeah, but if you use quantum mechanical system, you are sure this is random. Well, yeah, but if you use a yeah, but the pseudo random, someone could know what you're using. Could
yeah, okay, in this case, but for online casino, they would never do this.
No, they do it already. I want to check.
Maybe for the seeds, but not for.
They use in some they use it, yes.
Okay.
I can check that in order to. This evening, if I didn't say anything wrong, but we can check later on Google if this is the case. Okay, I think it's okay. We can finish now, and then tomorrow we go to Bell. Then, thank you very much.